Well, hey, Bethany, how y'all doing today? Hope you're doing tremendous. If this is your first time with us, I'm glad that you joined us and you ventured into a room like this. It's not always easy to come into a church for a very first time, and I'm glad you did. You know, whether you're at our Vincennes campus today or Princeton or here with us at Washington, you might see in all of our common spaces these Jesus signs that are going up, and those are going to be light boards. And so next week, we start a new series of sermons that are titled Illuminate. And it's about how we can be the light of Jesus Christ to somebody who is living in darkness, meaning in sin. And we know that as Christians, as believers, as a church, we've been called to uphold the light of Jesus Christ and illuminate that to all people. And so we're going to have a great series where we are going to have you personally think of someone whom is in your world, your sphere of influence, that needs Christ, that needs the light of Christ. And everybody's going to get a little LED light bulb. We're going to put who that is on that light bulb, and we're going to plug it in, and it's going to illuminate Jesus at all of our campuses as a reminder for us of what we're called to do, and that is to show who Jesus Christ is to others who are in darkness so they can be in the light of Christ like you found. And we're just closing out today our last sermon in the series that's titled Jesus Ruins Everything, which is actually a good thing. When he comes into your life, it's not that he ruins your life. He actually gives you a new perspective. And so what we're talking about is how he ruins religion and how he ruins our ideas of success and how he just blows that all apart. Because when Jesus shows you something, you can't kind of unsee it. You just now forevermore look at it in a different way. Kind of like with logos that you see all around us. When companies brand themselves and put out their logo, they do it just not with words, they do it also with an image. There's kind of something secondary to it. When you see it, you can't unsee it. Like you see the FedEx logo every single day probably, right? Then you probably noticed, or maybe you never have, I don't know, the little between the E and the X, that arrow that points the way. That's FedEx's way of saying, listen, as a freight company, we're always on the move. And you're saying, well, isn't that subliminal? Yeah, but it's also once you see it, you can't unsee it. Or how about Amazon? This is something I see nearly every single day. For some reason, there's always a package waiting on my door from Amazon. I don't know why. It's more than just a smiley face. It's Amazon's way of saying, we do everything from A to Z. Pretty clever marketing, right? How about this one? Tostitos. Now, I just learned this last week. I had no clue because I don't do the shopping in my house. Tostitos. The two T's are people, and the I is a bull, and with they're holding a chip and sharing it together. Did you ever see that before? I'm just like, I just thought it said Tostitos. I don't know. Because I'm an idiot. That's why. But what Jesus does is when he has an encounter with people, they see something for the first time and they can't unsee it and they got to deal with it. And Jesus did this all the time. But certainly today we're going to find out that he does this with stereotypes. That people had all kinds of stereotypes, assumptions, misconceptions about people, but especially about Jesus. And so Jesus just kind of goes out of his way to not live up to the stereotypes of his day. And I'm hoping that we can do that too, because when Jesus met a man or a woman, he treated them with an individual, unique way. It didn't matter if they were rich or poor. It didn't matter if they're what gender where they were. You know, when the society of his day were pushing people with disabilities away, Jesus would like go say, "I'm going to go to you and I'm going to show you who I am, and I'm going to love on those that are not being loved on." And he made a way to those that are pushed away by meeting with those that had a disability. And it just didn't matter to Jesus. It didn't matter who you were. It didn't matter the color of your skin. It didn't matter what ethnic background you were. It didn't matter your economic level. I mean, there's not a single story that you could tell me of Jesus where he's like, no, I'm not going to deal with you because you are. Like he just, anybody welcome, all welcome. And it's so incredible because that wasn't the norm of his day. And like, guys, it's not the norm of our day either. And so Jesus is something special. He welcomes anyone and everyone. And he sees them for who they uniquely are. I mean, he has an incredible dignity for every single person. And he ruined stereotypes because when he met with people, the rest of the world had this assumption, misconception, and Jesus has said, no, we need to look beyond the skin. We need to look beyond the appearance. We need to get to the heart of who people are. So let's not hold them to their past, and let's not hold them to their skin color. Let's not hold them to their ethnic background. Let's not hold them to their economic level. Let's just embrace people for who they are, that they're children of God, and they deserve dignity too. And church, listen, Bethany, I want all of us who call this place home to be that kind of people, to be the kind of people in the kind of church that we just, we embrace and we welcome everyone for who they are uniquely and individualistically. But I know that Jesus wants that for us as well. And I think Jesus desires for us to see the world through his eyes. Like see race through his eyes. To see ethnic and culture through his eyes. To see gender through his eyes. To see age through his eyes. And I think we will never truly understand how to live right in a wrong world until we abandon our stereotypes of people, abandon our misconceptions, abandon our assumptions, and just truly embrace people as Jesus did, loving them one person at a time for who they are. And there's not a story that I could come up with that I think is more poignant, that has so much mess in it, that would show how Jesus just unravels stereotypes and assumptions than what we find in John chapter 4. Turn with me there in the Bible that's located in the chair rack in front of you if you don't have one. It's 862. Otherwise, get on one of your devices. Just type in John 4 and follow along with us. We're going to start in verse 4. It's the story that we know so well in church as the woman at the well. And it's a story of generalizations. It's a story of stereotypes. It's a story of racism. It's a story of prejudice. It's a story of gender bias. It has all these complications within it. But really, it's a story of a woman that doesn't want to deal with what's really in her heart. And Jesus cuts right through all that stereotype stuff and says, I want to illuminate your life, and I want to show you something about who God is that she just couldn't see because she had misconceptions. So we're going to start in John 4. Look at verse 4. It says, now he, meaning Jesus, had to go through Samaria. Okay, right there it starts off by giving us a description of location. And for us, this wouldn't mean much, but this is like an area of town or an area of the region that Jesus just wouldn't go to. And it's about ready to tell us why. And it says, so he came to a town in Samaria called Sychar, near the plot of ground Jacob had given to his son Joseph. Verse 6, Jacob's well was there, and Jesus, tired as he was from the journey, sat by the well. It was about noon. I love all the details, don't you, of John? It's noon. He's there, tired. And when a Samaritan woman, very specific in description of who's there, a Samaritan woman, not like Jesus, came to draw water, Jesus said to her, will you give me a drink? Oh, and by the way, John adds, his disciples had gone into town to buy food. So it's just him and her. And the Samaritan woman said to him, you're a Jew, and I'm a Samaritan woman. How can you ask me for a drink? And then John just adds, like, for Jews do not associate with Samaritans. Like, he knew there would be an audience one day that would say, you're not going to understand what's going on here, so I got to tell you a little bit what's going on here. And I don't think we understand totally what's going on here, except for that Jesus is meeting a woman with a real problem, and she just wants to deflect the problem, because anybody with a real problem doesn't want to get to deal with the problem. They just want to deflect the problem. You've met folks like that. Let's talk about the problem. No, let's not talk about it. Let's talk about some other things. And so she brings up some other things. Like, first off, she brings up, I'm a Samaritan and you're a Jew. We have two different cultural, ethical, religious backgrounds. We're not the same, in case you're wondering. And right off the bat, she would have been angry about this. She would have scoped out Jesus, saw Jesus, jumped to some conclusions about Jesus, because every Jew that she has messed with in Samaria has been one that has come as an enemy, because that's exactly who Jews and Samaritans were. They were enemies of one another. As a matter of fact, Jews would go out of their way not to go into Samaria. They'd go around it, even though it cost them hours and miles of their journey. They would refuse to go into enemy territory because they saw the Samaritans as half-breeds. They saw Samaritans as trying to gain a right to God that wasn't legitimately theirs. And so here's Jesus, who is a Jew, and he is in Samaria, in her town. And she would have said in her head, you don't belong here. And she points it out. And I think right there is something that is being uncovered that I think sometimes we don't like to deal with, and that is the stereotype of race, or the stereotype of culture, or the stereotype of our ethnic background. We're going to act like those stereotypes don't exist. And Jesus confronts it, like immediately confronts it. You're like, well, how does he confront it? Well, immediately he just shows up. He just shows up. I know I'm not supposed to be here. I know I'm not welcome here because you're stereotyping, but I'm here. I'm here. And I'm not here to like argue. I'm not here to lead you. I'm just here. I'm here. And what I find most outrageous about our stereotypes is the stereotypes that we carry about race. I mean, just think about it. Just because of for most of us, we associate race and the color of our skin, as those go hand in hand. And just when we see someone from a different ethnic background, we see someone with a different skin color, we look at them and we immediately have and draw conclusions, both negative and positive. And they're so outrageous. And you can see how it's fractured our nation. You can see how it's fractured our own life. And these generalizations, and why they harm us is because they keep us from one another. They keep us from loving each other, really. And I think some of us like to hold on to them because we like to be in that defensive posture, like, I don't want to have to. And how does Jesus break it down? How does he overcome that in his day? He doesn't have like, hey, let's have a conference. Let's invite Samaritans and Jews together and we'll just talk it about. No. He just shows up. And he just meets with this woman one-on-one. And she has these stereotypes about who he is, and I don't know, maybe she's never met a Jewish man that has been nice to her. I mean, custom of the tradition was, if a Jew were to ever meet a Samaritan, he was either to do one of two things, either kick dust on them or to spit on them. And Jesus doesn't do either. So she's pretty hostile in the moment. You're a Jew, I'm a Samaritan, what are you doing here? And Jesus remains calm. But there's a greater issue as well. There's another stereotype, a stereotype of gender, because boy, if there ever was a gender bias in all of time, there is a gender bias that lands right there in John 4, a gender bias that says women have no rights in society. Like, when Jesus was talking to this woman, the ideals were that a woman couldn't talk to a man unless she was first talked to. And a woman's opinion, a woman's testimony in court was not even, like, wanted, is so much so that if she saw what had taken place, and if she was a credible eyewitness, it didn't matter. She wasn't welcome to testify in court because of her gender, she wasn't even credible. Isn't that crazy? It gets kind of even worse. Like, women weren't even counted. You can find that even in the Bible in that time. It's not that they were biased. This is just the way society rolled. How many people were fed when Jesus fed the 5,000? How many men? 5,000 men. How many women? I don't know. They didn't count them. How many people came to in Acts? I don't know. The women weren't counted, just the men. They're just overlooked. Complete gender bias. And so I get that there are stereotypes. I think some of the greatest stereotypes happen when we think about gender. Like, you think men and all of a sudden you have these classic stereotypes like, well, you listen, men are uncomfortable expressing their feelings. All men are uncomfortable expressing their feelings. Or you have things like, well, men are just aggressive and competitive. And here's what men would say about other men who aren't aggressive and competitive. They're just not really manly men. Or men are lost when it comes to parenting. That might be kind of true sometimes. Or this one. All men think about is sex. And that's not true. That's not all the time. It's most of the time, but not all the time. Or how about this one? Predominant stereotypes of women. All women are bad drivers. Women are just led by their emotions. Women are independent and weak. Or this one. I hear this from single men all the time. Women are so complicated. Just these stereotypes. How does Jesus break down the stereotype when it comes to he being a man and she being a woman and the bias of the culture? He talks to her. He loves on her. He sees her for who she truly is. And he doesn't want to get caught up in the engagement of race. That's the deflection that just keeps us at arm's length. He doesn't want to get caught up in the debate about gender. Just keeps us at our length. And I know she probably just met men that were chauvinistic. She's just met Jews that were arrogant. She's just met men who were Jews that have a racial prejudice. I understand that. And so she lands the stereotype on Jesus, and Jesus breaks it all down. How does he break it all down? Just by loving on her. Just by being there. Just by not being anger and matching her stereotypes. And the greatest of stereotypes that you find here, the greatest of assumptions and misconceptions that this woman has about Jesus is found in verse 10, and it's that this man will judge me. Look at verse 10. Jesus says, if you knew the gift of God and who it was who asked you for a drink, you would have asked him and he would have given you living water. So what Jesus is actually telling her is, if you had just looked beyond the surface, If you would have just dropped your prejudice, if you would have just dropped your stereotypes or your assumptions or misconceptions of me, that I'm a man and I'm a Jew, if you would have just looked further and got to the heart of who I am, you would have discovered that I'm more than what I appear to be. But you couldn't get there because you generalized me. And Jesus is basically saying to her, if you just went up beyond the appearance, if you just went beyond the skin and got to the heart, And I'll tell you what, guys, we know from the story, and some of you know the story, the reason why she didn't want to get to the heart or allow this person to come close, and while she embraced her stereotype, she didn't want Jesus to get closer because she was avoiding something that she didn't want her society to see, yet alone an outside stranger to see. And there's a reason why she's at that well that day when no one else is there during the heat of the day. It's because she is isolating herself because she is filled with embarrassment about the lifestyle that she is living. She's just filled with embarrassment. And have you ever met people like this, that they're filled with embarrassment because they've kind of changed lanes in their life? Like, things are good, now they're not going so good, and family talks about it at the table, but doesn't talk to them. People at work are talking about them, how they've changed so much. And yet they've just kind of changed lanes. And they're no longer around anymore. They're no longer the same person anymore. Sometimes you see this in your small group, right? Like, they're so committed to faith. They're so committed to church. You see them sitting next to you in the service. And then you go to Wednesday night small group or something together. And you're talking to each other, getting close to each other. And just like that, they vanish. They're gone. They're just like, I don't know. You know, like a cat just goes off to die. And you're like, kind of like, where's the cat? I don't know where the cat is, you know? They're gone. Can I tell you, like, primarily from a pastor's standpoint, why it is that people just vanish from the church? Number one is just life gets hard. Life gets hard. And there's the death of someone they love, and life gets hard, and they question their faith. Maybe it's just that life gets busy, or work gets hard, and there's stresses. Like, Jesus talks about this when he talks about the sower and the seed that lands in the gravel, or it lands in the rocky places. Life just gets hard and lands in the weeds, and just life squeezes out what they want in faith. But other times, their behavior or lifestyle is not matching the faith that Jesus calls us to. And that's usually primarily it. And they're embarrassed to come back to small group. They're embarrassed to come back to church, because their lifestyle is not matching. And there may be a feeling of guilt, but more than anything, that if you were to see them or text them, and you know how it commonly is, right? If you've ever been in this situation, it's, hey, we've missed you. We'd love to see you back. And then the next time is, hey, where you been? We've missed you. And then you see them at the grocery store, right? And then you're like, hey, we've really missed you coming to small group. Would you come back? And it's always the same kind of say back. It's always the same. It's always, we'll be there next week. And they're not there next week. And so you meet them again. And hey, we've missed you. Can I tell you why they're probably not coming back? It's more than likely they have a stereotype of your group or a stereotype of this church. And they don't see this place as a grace place. They don't see your group as a grace place. They see your group, they see this church as someone that if they were to really show the darkness that was within them, or really the behavior or the lifestyle that they've embraced, that when they were to expose that to you, or if it was illuminated, that darkness, that they would feel judged rather than finding mercy or grace. So Jesus says to this woman, hey, what if there's something I could give you? Like, what if there's something I could give you that could meet your deepest need? And you wouldn't have to, like, go searching around this world in sin or bad behavior. Like, ultimately, we know that this woman is caught in some kind of crazy adulterous affairs with multiple men. Like, I can't even make sense of it. Jesus can, but I can't. I don't even know what her lifestyle really was, except that she had a lot of men in her life, and she's just jumping from man to man. In John chapter 4, verse 13, Jesus answered, everyone who drinks this water will be thirsty again. You can almost see Jesus pointing out the well and saying, everyone who drinks from that water, the water that comes from that well, is going to get thirsty again. Look at verse 14. He says, whoever drinks the water I give them. It's almost like Jesus says, I'm not pointing at the well anymore. I'm pointing to me. And whoever drinks from the water I give them will never thirst. Indeed, I give them the water I give them will become in them a spring of water welling up to eternal life. And she's thinking, I want that because my life is not right. And I know she wants to just, it's easier to keep Jesus as an arm length and just kind of have some misconceptions. So she wants to talk about race, and she wants to talk about religion, and she wants to talk about, the gender barrier, and Jesus like having nothing to do with it. He's just going to love the person in front of him. I'm not going to live up to your stereotypes. I'm just going to love on you. I'm going to show compassion to you. And so Jesus says to her, go and call your husband and come back. Verse 17, she's like, I have no husband. Wasn't really alive because she, Jesus says to her, you're right when you say you don't have a husband. The fact is you have, what? Five. You have five guys in your life. And the man you now have is not your husband. I don't know what that relationship's called. Someone afterwards, you can tell me. Well, here's how it goes. And Jesus says that the woman looks and says, what you said is quite true, sir. The woman said, I can see that you are a prophet. Like, you got to the root here. You got to the problem right here. And here's what I love about Jesus. She had these stereotypes of Jesus. He's going to be chauvinistic because he's a man. All men in my world have been chauvinistic. He's going to have hatred towards me because he's a Jew, and I'm a Samaritan, and all Jews have hatred towards Samaritans. And Jesus says, I'm going to love you right where you're at. I'm not going to let those things get in the way of what needs to be talked about right now. And what really needs to be talked about is this entanglement of sin that was in her life. And she tries to deflect, and she tries to put up defense, and she is thirsty, and Jesus knows it, but she's not thirsty for what she has come for, water. She's thirsty for what she can't get, and that is peace and grace and mercy, peace with God. She's thirsty for the truth that only Jesus can satisfy. Look at verse 28. It says, then leaving her water jug. Wait a minute. Didn't she come? Come on, guys. She came to the well. She came to the well at noon. Why? To go get water. That's why she is at the well, to go get water. She didn't know Jesus was going to be. But what did she leave behind? The very thing she was looking for. And she comes and she leaves behind the water. That's a statement that said she left what she thought she needed because she found something better. Isn't that great? She found Jesus. And the woman went back to town and said to the people, look at verse 29, come see a man who told me everything I did. At one point, she was hiding it. At one point, she didn't want to see the darkness in her. Now she's like, you know what I've done. Everybody knows what I've done. I know we've been trying to like avoid the conversation. He told me what I've done, and I'm not proud of what I've done, but I know we all know what I've done, but I'm not embarrassed by it. Why am I not embarrassed by it? Because I found someone who's going to show compassion and grace. He's going to love on me and show me mercy. Verse 30, they came out of town. Like, who does that, right? You come out of town because you're like, well, I've never met anybody like that. They all want to meet Jesus. They came out of town and they made their way towards him. Skip down to verse 39. Many Samaritans. I love that John adds that. I love that he adds that. All these people came to this Jewish man. All these Samaritans who are enemies, they came to Jesus from the town believing him because of the woman's testimony. What did she say? He told me everything I did. It's almost like now she's like, he is so amazing. He looked right into my heart and he got past all these stereotypes and misconceptions and assumptions. And he just looked at me. And he loved me. Wow. He looked at me and he loved me. He looked right into her soul. And she felt empty and she felt fearful and she felt exposed. And that's why she isolated herself. And Jesus says, if you truly see me as the Messiah, you need to quit looking for men. You need to quit looking to the world for satisfaction. And you need to take the water, the living water that I bring to you. And she immediately says, I'm going to leave behind that. And I'm going to get what you are offering. Man, she had so many misconceptions of Jesus, and Jesus knocked them all down, didn't he? He knocked every single one of them down by loving on her and being there in her presence. Can I tell you what stereotypes do? Here's what stereotypes do, whether they're positive or negative. Here's what they do. Stereotypes alter our perception of the individual. And Jesus is loving the individual, okay? He's not loving the crowd. He's not loving the group. He's saying, I'm going to love whoever is right in front of me. That's who needs my compassion. That's who I'm going to love. And what happens is we jump to the conclusion about people so quick based on stereotypes. And most of the time, we're just not fair-minded. We're not fair-minded. We're closed-minded about it. And we keep people at arm's length just because we have misconceptions and assumptions about who they are based on, more than likely, the simplicity of appearance. Let me give you a for instance. Jesus kind of walked down this road, and we'll kind of jump from this instance to a story that Jesus told. Let's just say that you're driving late at night, like 2 a.m. in the morning, and I don't know why you're out, doesn't matter, but you're in Chicago, 2 a.m. in the morning, and you're in an area of Chicago that's called West Garfield Park. If you don't know about West Garfield Park, that is an area of Chicago where violent crime is the highest, and your car begins to lurch and stop, and the dashboard of your car starts to light up like a Christmas tree, and you realize something is wrong, and your car won't go any further, and so you pull over, and your car won't start again, so you hit your flashers, clearly identifying that you need some help or that you're in distress, but it is 2 a.m., and you recognize now you know where you're at, and so you're thinking, this is not a good place to be stopped. This is not a good place to have car trouble, so you immediately try to get on your phone to see who you can call, who can help rescue you or get you out of that situation. And as you're doing that, you look up and there are three men walking out of the darkness towards you. Big men. Black men. What's your first thought? Okay, I know we're predominantly white people here. I guarantee you your first thought wasn't, oh good, three men who are here to help. What if as they get closer, you see them smiling and joking with each other, and all three of them are carrying Bibles? Isn't it amazing the stereotypes we have that we hold on to ourselves? Jesus tells a story, kind of similar, about perception being reality, which is sad. And he's teaching a group of religious people. And so there's experts of the Bible there, experts of the law. And Jesus has a simple teaching. It seems simple, right? Love your neighbor as yourself. That's like primary faith stuff, isn't it? That's like, can you get any more primary? Would you just love people like you want to be loved? Love your neighbor as yourself. Just love yourself. And this guy asks, okay, he's an expert of God. Who's my neighbor? Because that makes it easier. Right? Like, who's my neighbor? You identify him and that will be easier because I don't like everybody. So who's my neighbor? So Jesus tells him a story. Luke 10, it's on the screen here, verse 30. In reply, Jesus said, a man was going to Jerusalem to Jericho when he was attacked by robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. So by all appearances, the man looks dead, but he's not dead. There's still life in his lungs, and a priest happens to be going down the same road, and he saw the man, and what'd he do? Pass by on the other side, just like Jews do when they have to avoid Samaria. And so too a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, pass by on the other side. Just so you are aware, both people in the story would have the cultural or ethnic background of being Jews. And now, if there ever were two guys that knew to stop, you would think in your mind, the priest should stop, right? That's how Jesus sets it up. The priest walks by the guy, and you're in your perception of reality, and you're thinking, that's like you, Matt, you should stop. Like, I would expect you to stop. Don't we pay you to stop? But like, you would think like somebody who's devoutly religious to God would stop and would have compassion. Would kind of like put away their bias and just love on the guy. And the priest doesn't. But in the original audience, those teachers of the law, they would have heard that and said, of course the priest wouldn't have stopped. Of course he wouldn't have stopped. Now, I know you're thinking he should have, but in their mind, they're thinking, of course he shouldn't have. Now, priests are from the tribe of Levi. And they had a specific requirement on them. If you get all the way back into the Old Testament, there were some rights and wrongs of a priest. One of the rights was that they would handle all of the sacrifices upon or for the people and declare them for God. And so they worked kind of behind the walls of the temple. They weren't really people. They weren't really personal people. They were just out of sight, just doing the messy work of sacrificing and offering things to the Lord and taking care of the temple. And by the way, there's this little clause in the law of Moses that says if a priest touches a dead body, they have to go through 7 days of purification. And Jesus starts off by saying the guy looked dead, but he wasn't dead. And so the priest just probably thought, I can't touch a dead body unless I want to give up 7 days vacation. And I'm not supposed to touch a dead body. So I just kind of walk around this. So at least in the original audience, they would have said, that makes sense. That made sense. I know not to you, not to me, but in that day, it would have been, that made sense. But here's the Levite. Now, this doesn't make sense because the Levite were like, they were known for their compassion. Now, all priests were Levites, but not all Levites were priests. Does that make sense? But they were devoted to God. They were committed to God. I mean, I think if you were to think of a Levite, you just think of someone that just calls himself a Christian. And I think most anybody in the world would say, Christians are to stop. Christians are to help. Christians are to be the ones that embrace others regardless of assumptions or misconceptions or stereotypes. Christians are the ones that are supposed to see the individual. And so the Levite is a lot like us in this story, and yet he does what? He doesn't help either. And all of the teachers of the law in the original answer said, he was supposed to stop. They would have said that. And then Jello, here's total Jesus stuff. He twists the story, right? So you get further in verse 33, but a Samaritan. Who? Wait, the other two were Jewish. This guy's a Samaritan. As a Samaritan, and more than likely, because Jesus starts off Jericho to Jerusalem. That's an area of where the Jews would live. So more than likely, the guy half dead in his story is Jewish. But a Samaritan, as he traveled, came to where the man was. And when he saw him, he took pity on him. You know what that word pity means? It says it's deep compassion. And it's this idea that the Samaritan felt that man's pain in his heart. Isn't that great? And he went to him and he bandaged his wounds. He poured oil and wine, which is a way for healing. And he put the man on his own donkey. Now, I could be writing it, but you need to write it because you're in worse shape than I am. Don't you love that part of the story? Brought him to the inn and said, you take care of him. Verse 35, the next day he took out 2 denarii. That's a pretty big sum of money. Gave him the innkeeper and said, look after him and I'll return and reimburse you for any extra expenses he might have. Even if he watches movies, I'll take care of the bill. Verse 36, which of these three do you think was a neighbor? Love the question. Which of these three, you religious experts, you asked who the neighbor should be. Who is my neighbor? Jesus says, well, you tell me who the neighbor is who fell into the hands of the robber. The expert of the law replied, why don't we just say it out loud together? The one who had mercy on him. And Jesus says, oh, you need to go and do the same. Go and do likewise. And of all the people that should not have helped, he stopped and helped. Of all the people that had a stereotype, assumptions, misconceptions, all the people that probably carried a prejudice, who should not have helped, the Samaritan helped in Jesus' story. And the original audience said it made sense that the Levite helped, and then maybe next the priest, but certainly not the Samaritan. And they're so angered by this story, by the way. I know you don't catch the anger in there, but the words we just said together were words of anger. They're words of frustration about Jesus. You can tell they're angry because he won't even mention the background, the ethnicity, that it was a Samaritan. Did you catch it? Which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell in the hands of the robbers? The guy says, the one who had mercy. I can't even bring myself to say Samaritan. The religious leaders can't even bring himself to say it. They can't even believe that in Jesus' story, a Samaritan would have mercy towards a Jew. And in those days, that would have never happened. Who's the hero of the story? The one they least expected it. Why? Because he had the most reason to have hatred, the most reason to hold a grudge, the most reason to have assumptions and prejudice. It's amazing to me that in Jesus' story that he tells us, the ones that should have stopped didn't stop, and the one who shouldn't have stopped, stopped. Okay, you might be saying, all right, let's get to it. What's the reasons for all this? Why are we talking about this? Why are we talking about stereotypes? Why are we talking about misconceptions and assumptions? I'll tell you why. Because stereotypes keep us from unconditionally loving others. That's what it does. That's what it does. It keeps us from opening up our heart, opening up our lives to other people that are different than us, more than likely just because of appearance. And I'll tell you what holds so many congregations back from really loving on their community. Stereotypes. We're not going to go to them because they live on this side of the town. We're not going to deal with them because they're this kind of way. We're not going to minister to these kinds of people because they look this way. And we're just going to push them away. Some of you have been to churches like that? You weren't embraced, you weren't accepted, maybe because of a place where you're from, maybe because of background in your past, just because of the stereotypes that are assumed or associated with. And you haven't been embraced by a church, you've been pushed away by a church. And I would bet to say, and here's what's so sad, when people think about Christians anymore, followers of Christ, they're not thinking about who we are as followers, they're thinking about who we aren't. They're saying, oh, I know Christians, they've identified themselves about all the stuff that they're against. I know Christians, they're the ones that are hypocritical, right? I know Christians, they're the ones that are judgment, right? And there's a stereotype upon us as well. And yet the stereotype that Jesus wanted to leave the world was one that was just simple, love. Isn't that how Jesus defined it for all of us? He said there should be a common denominator, a great trait that is existing within the church, in the bride of Christ, that the world recognizes that it can't, I mean, above all things, this is the one thing that the church should be known for. And here's what he says in John 13. By this, all men will know that you are my disciples if, let's just say it out loud, if you love one another. Let's say it again. If you love one another. And yet, above all things, the greatest stereotype that should be true of us should be that Christians love. Love just like Jesus did to that woman in Samaria. Love just like that Samaritan did to that Jewish man that was left for dead, and his own countrymen wouldn't even look after him. What did Jesus say? You guys want to know really how to get this right and live up to the law of God? You need to do two things, and you need to do them really well. Love God, and you need to start loving people. And when the guy says, yeah, but what kind of people? Jesus says, all kinds of people. What are you talking about? When I was first getting into ministry, I had this little crusade to go talk to all the guys in my life that were in ministry that were important to me and influential. And I have all these notes, man. I went back and looked at all these notes, about just pages and pages of notes. And I'd ask this simple question: what do I need to know in ministry to be a great minister? Not good, great. And all these guys would give me the same kind of line. Like, you need to know leadership. You need to know high levels of leadership, man. You need to know systems and structures. You need to know stuff that on how to handle people well. You need to know how to hire. You need to know how to fire. You need to know how to work with people. And you know, basically what they described, I mean, honestly, looking back, I mean, you could read any kind of secular book about how to, like, high management or CEO positions. That's the kind of information they were giving me. And I remember going to the guy that I just loved the most, had tons of experience. I said, all right, what is it that I need to do to be a great pastor, preacher, minister? I said, because here's what these guys have told me. They told me I need to do systems and structures. I need to know about how to be a leader in these ways. And I need to have high skills of management, et cetera. He said, oh, yeah, those things are helpful. He said, but number one, you just need to love all people. Just love people for who they are. Just right in their place, right in their space. You need to love them in their Samaria. Each and every one. Friends, that doesn't just apply to pastors. That applies to each and all of us who call ourselves Christians. Because if there's anything that this world knows, anything the non-believing world knows, is that Christians are supposed to love. And when they don't see us love, it plays right into their stereotype that they're hypocritical, they're judgmental. And we become more like the Samaritan woman than we become like Jesus. And we become more like the priest and the Levite than we become like the Samaritan, the good Samaritan. And the reason why that stereotype is there is because we haven't lived up to what they know about Jesus. So, like, there's an outside world, they don't know much about Jesus. But here's what they do know. They know that Jesus loved every single person he met and had great compassion for him. And when we don't live up to that, we just look like everybody else. And what Jesus said to the expert of the law is what I'll leave you with today. Go and do likewise. Go and do what Jesus has already done and shown the way. Love those that are right in front of you, each and every one of them. Regardless of their differences, regardless of their appearance, regardless of their past, regardless of their background, regardless of where they're from, regardless of their economic level, regardless of their gender, regardless, you love them for who they are, with incredible dignity, with unconditional love. So that you may also be a place of grace and proclaim the good news of Christ Jesus and illuminate their darkness so that they may forevermore live for Christ Jesus. Will you pray with me? Lord, may we see ourselves today. May this be a mirror And may we see the areas where we have built up misconceptions and assumptions about people groups and cultures, skin color and backgrounds and economic levels. Oh, the list goes on and on and on about all the prejudice and all the ways in which we have labeled and generalized, and we just haven't accepted the individual that is right in front of us. So may we be quick to throw that aside and be more like you. And Father, may we abandon those areas of our life that have held us back from loving on people. People who are different than us. And may we be more like Jesus today. And we pray these things in Christ's name. Amen.